Hey everybody, Greg Carlwood here. Before this episode pops off, I wanted to say that yes, a big part of me would love to see the THC audience make a significant difference in the world, organize a real resistance, or a community outside of the system, and that may come someday. But I get so many awesome emails and messages about people liking the show, and I just wish there was more that could be done to get to know you guys and form a group. Maybe someday throw events with conspiracy speakers, comics, cool bands, and artists. Maybe. Those are just ideas. I'm just spitballing here. But the first step to that would be meeting each other, and coming up on June 1st and 2nd in the San Jose area is Conspiracy Con 2013. I know the man that puts on the conference, Brian William Hall. He's awesome, and hopefully he'll be here on THC before the big event. But you should really consider taking a few days to get away, hang out in San Jose, smoke some weed with me. Maybe we can go out to a dinner or something. Who fucking knows? But Conspiracy Con is going to be a blast. Lots of awesome speakers. So think about it. I'd love to see you guys there June 1st and 2nd. Tickets are on sale at conspiracycon.com. If you get in before May 18th, it's $90 for one day, $160 for both days. I've been to a lot of conferences. That's not a bad price for 2 days and 10 speakers. People pay outrageous prices to go to Burning Man or Coachella. Let's do it for the conspiracy community. The Crown Plaza Hotel, where the conference is, even has a shuttle service from the San Jose airport. We have to support the alternative instead of the conventional people. Give it some real thought. I have no incentive here except to meet fans, have a great weekend, maybe sell a couple t-shirts, bada bing, bada boom. If you get tickets, let me know, and I'll put something together for us THC listeners and the smokers. Now enjoy the show.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
Fireside Chatters, welcome to the goddamn show. I'm Greg Carlwood. Packed bowl to the left of me, cold beer to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you. Enjoying another sunny San Diego day. Co-hosting today is my good friend and confidant, Jake Bender. Jake, man, what's happening?
Nothing. A nice sunny day here in St. Louis, too, man. It's wow. Beautiful out right now. I think it's supposed to be a high 75 today, so getting back into the spring.
Wow, spring has sprung. Is that what they say?
It is, actually. I was thinking about saying that. I was like, no, that'd be really fucking cheesy, so I won't say it. And yeah, then you did.
That's
so
okay.
I appreciate it.
I can do that. Jake, you know, last time we talked, man, you had just listened to that THC episode with James Calhoun from the movie Food Matters and Hungry for Change. You were writing your last blog for me, and you were buying vegetables, getting a juicer, knocking off the cigarettes, and going to pro wrestling school. It's been about 2 weeks. How motivated have you stayed with all that? You still juicing?
Still juicing, yeah, pretty much every day. I haven't juiced yet this morning, but I went grocery shopping last night and I bought a shit ton of produce, so nice. I didn't do a whole lot of exercising this week because I don't know what the hell is going on with my legs and my arms and shoulders, but man, I was sore as shit all week. I had a pretty rough week at work, though. That might have been part of it. I had a lot of work to do. But we're getting back into it. Feeling pretty good.
That's awesome. I mean, you have a job, obviously, we've talked about it, that is pretty tough. And I've known you for a long time. You've never been a healthy eater or a healthy guy. If you can, you know, you're smoking cigarettes like a pack a fucking day. And, you know, I can't get motivated to get in any kind of health. And you've been able to do it. Do you have any advice? Because I'm surprised. I'm pleasantly surprised. I'm glad you're doing it, but I'm surprised you could just kick cigarettes and shit food and soda all at once and work out and maintain and stick with it.
You're giving me too much credit here because I actually have a cigarette in between my fingers right now.
What the fuck, man?
I know. Yeah, that's the one thing I've not been able to fucking kick yet. I mean, I'll do a little bit of diet soda here and there, which you and I talked about that on the phone last weekend.
Aspartame, man, you gotta quit.
You like reamed me a new asshole. Like, don't fucking drink diet soda. Sorry, dog. But
well, it's just so counterproductive because you're doing it. It's counterproductive because you're doing it for your health, and it's actually way worse, and it's eating your fucking brain.
This is true.
Apparently.
Apparently. But no, I'm shit, man. Monday through Friday, I just drink water. That's pretty much it. Water and then my juice in the morning. And cigarettes, I'm going to hit that pretty hard this week, I think. I think it was too much to fucking try to quit everything all at once. You know what I mean?
I agree.
I went cold turkey the one day, and my wife pretty much made me smoke a cigarette because I was a dick.
Wow.
I was an asshole. I was pissed off at everybody. I wanted to kill everything. So she pretty much made me smoke a cigarette that day. And she told me, she's like, you need a cigarette because you're being a dick.
I can't drink water because I think water is so boring. I'm at work. I want something with some flavor to it. I don't even feel like I like sugar. Like, if something is way too sugary, I'm the first one to say I'm not drinking that shit. But I just need soda or something.
That's the thing, man. You just got to... I can say I feel like a hypocrite saying this. I still haven't quit smoking, but the whole thing with the soda, you just got to talk yourself out of it, man. Just say, hey, this water's a hell of a lot better for me, even if it does have fucking fluoride in it. I still haven't got a water filter, but I just got to break through that, and that's all I drink now, man. Monday through Friday, I just drink freaking water, and I'll tell you what, just doing that. The difference between that and the week before, where I was drinking diet soda and Powerade Zero and shit like that, is there's a pretty big difference there. I feel
really
much more energetic and everything, even without the caffeine, because it's all like just a natural energy instead of, you know, a drug-fueled energy, I guess you could say.
That was one of my things. One of the things I was curious about, because I can't seem to get myself up in the morning without a soda. And so when I'm like tired as shit driving to my store, the idea of getting a water, I mean, I think about it, but I'm like, no, dude, you need something much better. You need something. You need to wake the fuck up.
Have you tried that? I don't know how good these are for you, but have you tried one of those 5-hour energies? Try that with water.
Yeah.
But it's got to be better than down in a whole fucking, like, a, you know, an 18-ounce can of fucking Monster.
Maybe, but I mean, that just seems, it seems so strong. It's the smallest bottle with the longest duration of energy. Just, it doesn't seem like it could be good. I mean, 5 hours is a huge commitment, too. I mean, I might call into work 2 hours in and want to go home and take a nap. You know, I can't commit to 5 full hours.
I don't even know what to say to that. That's a reasonable point, I guess.
I call in a lot, man. I call in a fucking lot. But looks like our guest today is actually on time. Wow. That is a great sign that I might get to leave the house today instead of being chained to this thing all day. So let's do that thing where I say how much I appreciate everybody, and I tell y'all that I have 7 stunning, stunning t-shirt designs at my sister site, conspiratees.net. We got UFOs building pyramids, we got sheep in suits, we got homeless guys holding signs to say quit your job, and we got the mascot of Conspiratees, the Squid of Power. Go check it out. So here's the ad. We'll see you on the other side with Jake the Man Hanrahan. And I need to sell some more shirts, so check them out and treat yourself, because you deserve it.
We're here because we don't buy into the bullshit of mainstream culture. We're tired of the mundane, passionless careers we've been shuffled into as a result of this orchestrated debt-based system of rule, and the stranglehold on education and entertainment by cold, soulless corporations. People... yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we are tired. And we reject the pre-approved tranquilizers that are Monday Night Football and an ice-cold Budweiser. But we have to stop hiding. Stop hiding behind the headphones and the Cherry Popper 420 username. Let the world see that the resistance is strong and society is changing. There was a time to be anonymous, but that time has passed. And so the Higher Side Chats would like to present Conspiratees as the dawning of this new paradigm in the uniform of the revolution. Because bold fashion should mean more than some celebrity meat dress or frat boy in a silly pink polo. Conspiratees redefines bold fashion as having the balls to reject socially uncomfortable and unpopular truths from your radiant chest all fucking day. Conspiratees.net. Let them know that you know. Bold designs for troubled times. Hard truths. Soft talk.
Pack your glass and park your ass, people. Today, Jake Bender and I are bull stuffing with the man, Jake Hanrahan, a freelance journalist from the UK. He's a badass motherfucker that wanted to avoid wasting away at an average job with a shitty boss, so he put the pen to paper and didn't stop writing until it paid off. Now he's been published in some of the most popular magazines and websites out there, including Wired, The Huffington Post, Rolling Stone,
MTV, and a personal favorite, Vice Magazine. Jake, how the hell are you?
I'm good, thanks, man. How you doing?
Doing well, man. It's good to finally get you here.
Definitely.
Some people are off put by the whole marijuana angle of the show, so I tend to downplay it, but I gotta say, it's not even noon yet. I'm good and high. I'm in a good fucking mood. Are you a smoker, Jake?
No, not myself, but all my friends are. I've got nothing against it or anything like that, man. I mean, I think it's silly to be, how can you be against a herb, do you know what I mean?
Well, right.
Yeah.
Well, tell me a bit about how you made the move to freelance journalism. It's obviously a tough field to make a living in, and I like when people talk about the journey because it's inspirational for people who are trapped in a low-wage random job.
Sure. Well, I mean, I messed about in school a lot, and I didn't get any really real qualifications from there. I kind of got in a lot of trouble. I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. The only thing I was ever any good at was, like writing and English class. And I was really interested. I read a lot of books. And I somehow, around about the age of 16, 17, got into a lot of boxing. And I was kind of doing this unlicensed boxing circuit and kind of making a little bit of money from it. And I just thought, yeah, I'll just carry on doing this for a while. And then I had a daughter when I was 18, which is obviously incredibly young.
Damn.
So I thought, yeah. So I thought, you know, I've got to really plan. I've got to really find something I want to do with the rest of my life. And it just made sense. Writing was the only thing I was any good at. So I looked into it and I thought, well, I don't really want to be, you know, an author. I don't want to write fiction because I don't read a lot of fiction. I read a lot of, non-fiction. Mm-hmm. So kind of looked into that and I thought, yeah, I think I want to be, you know, I want to get involved with journalism and I just immersed myself in it. I completely taught myself, bought a lot of books. Not like I didn't buy books on journalism, if that makes sense. I just bought books that journalists had written,
right,
and kind of analyzed them and, you know, really looked into it and looked at the kind of journalist I liked. Because obviously coming from kind of, you know, blue collar family, a kind of modest background, I was unsure. I thought, oh no, could I do this? And the more I looked into it, I thought, well, of course I can. It's not all, you know, stiff necks and collars and ties and that like it is on the news. There's obviously some great journalists out there. So I looked into that and just kind of hold my craft and started pitching. So just, you know, find editor emails and just find my stories. And eventually I kind of found my own niche and it basically took off from there. And 2 years down the line, it's paying the wages, thank God.
Man, that is awesome, dude. You know, for people out there who think they can't do what they want to do, it does not get harder than no college degree and a kid at 18. It's so easy to, like, work a job because you have to have some money coming in and then get stuck. You're there 40 hours a week, maybe more. And you don't have the time to really look at any passion. So that's pretty badass that you stuck with it. And, you know, now you're writing for some of the coolest people around.
Sure. I mean, I have done all that. That is definitely. And that was one of the major things that put me off. I mean, I've done, you know, real shitty jobs, kind of hard labor jobs and in warehouse work. And I just thought, Jesus Christ, I can't do this forever. I mean, I felt like you're kind of working constantly and half your money's going out the back door anyway, and it was just a nightmare. I just realized I can't live like this. I just wanted to have some kind of adventure, but some kind of structure, but do that forever. You know, I wanted that to be my profession, and yeah, that's how it made sense to me. But I totally agree with you. I mean, I feel terrible for a lot of people who they just get stuck in these jobs and they can't, you know, there's some people can't just take the risk,
right?
Which is
right.
Yeah, Jake Bender here is in that situation.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I've got three kids here, and I drive a tractor trailer. Yippee. And actually, just here lately, made the conscious decision that I'm going to finally do something for myself. And it sounds probably childish, but I'm going to actually go to professional wrestling school. It was a big passion of mine growing up, and I've since kind of gotten out of it. But I figure I need something to kind of just take my mind off the everyday bullshit I got to go through and do something with my life, you know?
You need a little fantasy.
Yeah, I don't think that sounds childish at all. I mean, that sounds amazing. Like, it's got to be better than a 9-to-5, right?
I wish it was only a 9-to-5, man. It's like a 5-to-5.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Let's talk about some of the pieces you wrote. You know, one of the ones you wrote for Vice was about this Illuminati strategy card game. That was the most interesting to me because
I used to play Magic years ago, and the illustrations are damn creepy on there, you know? It's the one with the Pentagon on fire, the Twin Towers exploding. I mean, this is 95. The game seems like it'd be pretty fun, too, like a conspiracy guru's Magic the Gathering, you know?
Sure.
But you want to tell people a little bit about that article?
Yeah, I mean, I've been interested in conspiracy theory since I was about 13 years old, and I'm 23 now. I've always been interested in, when I first kind of got into conspiracy theories, I think as a lot of people do, I believed in them, you know, 100% as if it was the gospel. And obviously as I got older, I kind of, you know, you become a skeptic a little bit more, but you still kind of believe in them. And the card game was something that really interested me. And I remember one day coming across it again on the online, and I thought, Jesus Christ, these look, you know, they look really prophetic. They do look like they knew what was going on. And, but of course, I thought that's just, you know, that's ridiculous. So I looked into it, and I managed to track down quite a lot of the people that were involved in making it. And one of the interesting things to me was that the Secret Services actually raided the company that were making the comic whilst, you know, in the middle of, before they released it. And that, which is the conspiracy theory goes, you know, people say, oh, they knew that they were going to unleash their plans. But it turns out it was a hacker was working for them, who was, you know, running a lot of hacking boards on the internet, and they presumed that he was running his hacking services from the place he was working at. But of course he wasn't, and it's quite a landmark case where the SJ Games, the people that made the comic, won a lawsuit against the Secret Services because they just went in and they basically had a really flimsy warrant, and they just said, look, he's probably doing it, we'll go in and then we'll be fine and he'll have to plea bargain. But it turns out there was nothing going wrong, so they got in a lot of trouble when SJ Games sued them. So I think from the start, that game was already, you know, destined to kind of go down in conspiracy folklore, as it were.
Yeah, well, there's one part where you talked to the head illustrator, and he hinted that the Steve Jackson guy who ran the company was participating in occult magic during those days. Did he elaborate on that at all, or was, you think he was just trying to hype up a dead story?
He was completely just pissing about with me. He was laughing as he, you know, he was kind of being very sarcastic, and he found the whole he knew about the conspiracy theory around it, and he just found it hilarious. Yeah. Now I've spoken to some people since and said, oh, he was a disinfo agent, but I don't know. I mean, I don't believe that was true. He just found it funny.
Yeah, it's just some illustrator who had an interesting job, who then there was some controversy, and he's just playing it up.
Yeah, I mean, the guy that did make it, this Steve Jackson, what this head illustrator did say to me, he said he was very interested in conspiracy theories and he really looked into them a lot, but he didn't say that he believed in them so much. He was just more interested in them. And the 9/11, you know, the card where it looks like the Twin Towers, for example, that is actually titled something like Soviet Nuclear Launch or something. So at the time, you know, the Soviet tensions were quite high at the time. So that was actually not meant to be, you know, anything to do with 9/11, and people have kind of taken it and run with it. But, I mean, there is a lot of strange things with it. And even after I did the little investigation into it, and I kind of made my theories on it, that it was just, a lot of it is just coincidence. There is weird things, because the hacker who I contacted, who was the reason why they got raided, he was looking into 911 kind of schedules. So he was hacking into police databases and for some reason finding out what they would do in, you know, serious situations. So if there was a bomb scare, he was finding all the plans for it, and I've no idea, he didn't really elaborate on why, or wouldn't elaborate on why he was getting them. But so that was kind of a confusing aspect to it, but I don't believe personally that it is, you know, what people think it is.
Right. But I've been doing a lot of shows on synchronicity and the foreshadowing of events, and the card that you ended the conspiracy article was pretty symbolic looking. Of course, nothing happened at the London Olympics, but this picture is weird. It's got the five guys running in streetwear, all the colors of the Olympic rings in an offset pattern. The Big Ben clock is crumbling in the background. I would have definitely thought of that as some foreshadowing, but a lot of people were predicting something was going to happen, but nothing really did.
Sure, I actually wrote the article, yeah, like as you say, it was just before the Olympics started, and I thought, I believe, like, I was looking through it, I was like, oh, okay, and then when I saw that card as well, I just, like you said, I kept coming back to it, and I was looking at it thinking, Jesus Christ, this is spooky, and I personally, I thought something would happen at the Olympics, not due to the conspiracy at the Illuminati card game, but just because it would have been the perfect time for, you know, a terrorist attack or what have you. But, yeah, nothing happened. But I'll be honest, when I looked at it, I was kind of talking to the editor at Vice, the online editor, and I said, oh, look, and these Olympic rings are exactly the same colours. And when you look at it, it isn't quite right. One of them is kind of wearing a yellow shirt and a black waistcoat, and then there's like a guy in a white shirt as well. So I don't know. I looked at it and saw what I wanted to see. So there is one colour off. But yeah, I mean, if something had happened, and the Big Ben thing as well, I would have been really, you know, it would have probably sold me. I would have thought, nah, these guys are bullshitting me. They knew something. But as it happens, nothing occurred.
Yeah. Another thing I was going to ask you about, I've been wanting to ask someone about it, because obviously, you know things are bad. We've been talking about it. Things on all around the globe, you know, economies are having huge problems. Cyprus is going down.
Sure.
But I saw on your Twitter, you mentioned the other day, you tweeted something about Bitcoins. And I don't know. I know almost nothing about them. And maybe you don't either, but I thought I'd ask, because it seems super interesting, especially right now. It's going up. It's going down.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it is very interesting. I won't say that I know a lot about it, but I was invited to the Bitcoin conference in London last year. So it was called Bitcoin 2012. And I covered that for Vice. That was one of the first guys to write about, you know, this 3D gun printing thing. He was there. I forget the guy's name, Cody Wilson. He was there. They were all talking, obviously, they were talking about Bitcoin and the pros and cons of it. But it's essentially an electronic currency that has no government controlling it at all. So it's completely decentralized. And it was kind of introduced by this mysterious guy. I forget his name. It's like a Japanese name, which I don't even know if he exists. I don't know if he's a group of people or it's one person, but nobody really knows. It is kind of confusing. And to get hold of them, you have to like mine them you have to spend kind of money on actual hardware. You can trade them you can buy some using, you know, normal real money. I think it's a really interesting thing. But as I wrote in this article, I kind of said at the end of it, I don't know if they'll ever, you know, take over, because it just doesn't seem viable. I mean, I interviewed two hackers. I don't know if you saw the article, but I interviewed these two hackers and they were wearing masks in the middle of London. And it was hilarious. They were wearing like masks because they wanted to protect themselves from the CCTV. And they said to me, oh, yeah, it's going to be the future. And I said, well, okay, fair enough. For you guys know how to use and you're hackers. But what about someone like my grandmother, for example, who can't even use a computer? And I was like, you know what I mean? So there's, as with anything, there's lots of pros and cons for it. But I mean, I think it could work, and it would be good for these kind of third world countries and helping them out and transferring money. It wouldn't cost as much, and if they could use it. But when people a lot of people are buying them, waiting for the price to go up on the market and then selling them for real money. So it's like, it's completely, surely defeating the object of what they're meant for. So I don't know 100% of them, but yeah, I mean, did you read my, the shopping on the deep web article?
Oh yeah, dude. Silk Road. That was definitely a subject I wanted to talk about.
Yeah. So they use it because, it's almost untraceable. And if you're using it on the dark web, it's incredibly untraceable. So, yeah, it's an anonymous currency, which is more favored by, you know, hackers and activists. But, yeah, I heard, I think JP Morgan are kind of keeping an eye on it, and they've got stats on it and all sorts. So it could be useful.
Right. I mean, it's one of those things that it's, you know, you never make money by being late to the party. And this is one of those things that could potentially be the next way to make millions for guys like us, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
But
I read a story where a guy bought loads of them for when they were three. They were like 3 cents a Bitcoin at the time. This is years ago, and he just bought loads of them and forgot about them. And then obviously they went up to like $300. I think the peak was a Bitcoin, and he kind of went online, checked his wallet, and was like, Jesus Christ, you know, I've got a lot of money potentially sitting here. So exactly. You're exactly right.
And it's like, we know about, you know, being conspiracy theorists, we know it all revolves around banking. It all revolves around the control that controlling the money supply gives you over governments, over entire populations. So it's
sure.
appealing to try to want to get out of that. And I guess the way it's been explained to me, it's a non-centralized currency. it's obviously we don't even know who created it, so it's not really controlled by anyone, which is a bit scary, but it's controlled by algorithms and programming. But I guess the best way I've heard it explained is that it should replace commerce in the way that email replaced the postal service. Because, you know, if you're mailing something and they don't, you know, imagine also if you could mail packages through email, you know, it's like you don't want somebody to get something, so don't hand it over, because I can, with email, it's a direct line. And that's how this commerce works. It's a direct line from you to the buyer, where there's no middleman to process your payment or to confiscate your payment or to charge you, which that's really interesting. They said to think about it as like literally handing cash to your weed man. You know, it's like it's just different, but it's also its own currency, which is the trippy part, because its value is weighed against real currencies, and it's sure. going up and up. And I mean, I guess recently it just had its first major drop, but I have faith in this thing, man. I can't really even, I mean, at $300 a Bitcoin, I guess I can buy one or two, but it's not really the same, you know, as it was at 3 cents.
Sure. I mean, I when I did this Silk Road piece, it was a lot cheaper. I think it was about $10 a Bitcoin or something like that. And I was, you know, trying to get hold of them and that. And in the end, it just proved a bit difficult in the time frame I had to write the article. So I kind of, you know, I did it without actually buying anything, which was good, because I would have probably got arrested. So that's probably a good thing. But the thing is, if you, like you say, if you buy now when it's crashing, yeah, I mean, people are saying, oh, it's the end of Bitcoin, but I don't think it is, because it crashed a couple of months back, it crashed as well, when some hackers, which is another problem, some hackers just started stealing people's Bitcoins from their online accounts. So, and then it crashed, because obviously everyone's saying, oh, shit, I better pull these out and sell them quick. So, but yeah, I mean, my opinion is, though, I agree with everything you're saying. It could be really interesting, and it could, you know, give some more power back to the people, because obviously, as we know, the banks control a hell of a lot. But I don't believe that they would let it get that far. I mean, I don't know. I just think, do people believe that if it got that big, surely they would come in, they'd do something? You know what I mean? The banks will probably say, right, we'll buy everything Bitcoin related so that it comes back to us anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Agreed. Yeah, I do think the power structure is really, it's too secure. You know, they're ready for basically anything. I don't know how they let the internet get out. That was a big fuck up. But other than that, yeah, they're a pretty good track record. Here's the thing: is like, if I decide that I'm gonna sell, say, my T-shirts, I'm gonna take Bitcoins. I mean, then Bitcoin is viable regardless of if a government wants to shut it down, regardless of if a bank doesn't like it. So, I mean, I think the real pressure is on the merchants to start taking it, because if you can buy.
Sure.
You know, if you can buy your food with Bitcoins, then shit. Then who cares what anybody else thinks, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that is true. Yeah. You can buy pizzas now. There's a website where you can buy Domino's pizzas with Bitcoins.
See,
so, yeah, I mean,
it's
kind of progressing. Exactly, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, we mentioned Silk Road a little bit. Can you explain that to people? We've never really talked about it, but it is a pretty fascinating website.
It was amazing. When I first heard about it, man, it was just... it blew my mind. Basically, Silk Road is a website on the dark web, which is, of course, the kind of secret internet within the internet, which is kind of, I believe it was set up by the Navy so they could send, you know, more secure messages to each other or something like that. Could be wrong. But yeah, so it's a secret. It's a website where if you're using the dark web, you're basically totally anonymous anyway. So you can't be traced. And it's essentially an eBay of, you know, drugs. And at the time when I did my article on it, they had another section open called The Armory, which was by the same people that opened Silk Road. And they were selling, as you saw in the article I wrote, a guy tried to sell me C4. And, you know, they're selling rocket launchers and bazookas and kind of self-assembled Kalashnikovs. And it was just insane. So, yeah, the Silk Road is essentially a secret online merchants for all things illegal, really, which I said in my article, I didn't specifically disagree with. I mean, like I said at the end, it's drugs. Everybody does drugs. They're never ever, in my opinion, no, they'll never stop people doing drugs. And you know, the internet is just another 21st century invention, which, of course, I don't know, I didn't get why some people were so shocked, like, oh my god, they're selling drugs on the internet. And for me, I just thought, well, what did you expect? What did you think would happen? I think people would always find a way. But yeah, it's just a crazy, crazy place.
Anyone I know who's used it or knows somebody who used it, no one's gotten caught. So I guess I'm very skeptical that it's really anonymous, you know?
Yeah, and it really is. I'm not against drugs. Like, I mean, I've seen drugs ruin people's lives, but at the same time, I've got friends who do, you know, like acid and weed and stuff like that, kind of, and they're better for it usually. So in a way, I was looking at it and I was thinking, this is kind of good because people are not going to be getting drugs and getting, you know, beaten up or mugged or you know, kind of have their deal screwed over on them because it's all on the internet, so it comes straight to their door. So, pardon me, I thought, yeah, that was a good side of it, but then at the same time, it was like, well, maybe if there's some kind of suburban kid who maybe might not have ever gotten into drugs, suddenly finds Silk Road and starts buying them and gets them into his house. And, you know what I mean? I think it's a double-edged sword, but I wasn't shocked at all by it. And I don't specifically think it's a bad thing either.
Yeah, it's definitely crazy. But again, you know, they fucked up by letting us have the internet. Now we got our own black markets, and we might have our own fucking economy soon. So... but another great piece you wrote, one, I think it was a Vice piece, was one about this immortality cult that's living on this island off of Greece. One was pretty nuts. I mean, in the article you wrote, they feel the need to reconstruct the world and implement the birth of a new immortal human. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, that was insane. I can't even remember how I got onto that, because a lot of the articles, most of the stuff I write, you can't, you know, it's not that, obviously it's not out there, which is kind of my thing. I like to write about subculture. I can't even tell you how I found out about it. But yeah, basically, after the Chernobyl disaster, a load of scientists who were kind of contaminated from the, you know, from the fallout there, and they were working on the thing as well. They got together and they said, look, we need to get away. We need to make ourselves pure. And somehow ended up on this tiny little island called Gavdos, which is the northernmost point in Europe or something like that. It's this tiny little island. It looks like a big rock. Like, imagine, like, you just took a rock and hid it in the ocean. It just looks like that. And so there's not much there. But they went there, and, they worked for the church there, and there was, like, a normal, I think, like, a Catholic church or something like that. And the guy there, the priest, said, yeah, you can live with us. All these, you know, the scientists, to put it in perspective, were... basically Russia's equivalent of NASA, I forget the name now, but they were, you know, the top guys. So they went there, about six or seven of them, and they said, yeah, you can live here for free. And they just live like a really, you know, like I remember saying in the article, they kind of went Alex Supertramp, you know, they just lived off the land, they didn't communicate with anybody. And then all of a sudden, they said to the priest, look, we're building a church. And he was like, what? He said, we're building a temple, church type thing to Apollo, you know, the Greek god Apollo. And he's saying, he's kind of like, okay. So, and then they started doing all these strange experiments. And then the next thing, they kind of call a meeting with the town, and they just said, look, we're practicing immortality. We want to find out how to make the next person immortal. And it was very strange, because they were, on one hand, it's a kind of a philosophical thing where they're saying, yeah, we want to be self-sufficient and live off the land. But then on the other side, they're doing all these strange experiments, and they're building temples, and it's just insane, to be honest. And I've spoken to them since. I actually managed to get an email address, and I emailed them and said, look, here's my article, hope you like it, like, let me know what you think. And they're just very evasive, but they're very friendly, but they said, oh, we love it, it's great, but, you know, they won't tell you what they're doing there. So it's not a cult or anything like that, but it's just, I don't know, it's very strange. They believe in this new kind of new age stuff, but at the same time, they believe in science, of course, because they're all scientists. So yeah. they're trying to find a way to live without just corrupting and polluting everything. But I don't know. It's just kind of strange. It really is strange.
It seems like a modern day rapture on an island instead of a city under the sea if you're a BioShock player. It seems pretty weird.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm planning to go out there. And I'm trying to convince them to let me kind of film with them and do some stuff like that, but they're very closed off. But they did say, like, if anyone would do it, they liked the art, and they said, we'll think about it. So I'm going to go there this year and kind of, you know, hang about. They said I can stay there with them, and then they'll decide if they'll let me bring the cameras in or not. So we'll see how that goes. I'll probably get killed.
Dude, that's badass. I mean,
I was going to say, in the article, there's a Kickstarter documentary that you linked to, but it seems like that was pretty much dead. So,
yeah,
going out and doing that, man, you could be the guy. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that's what I want to get into. And I'm in a lot of talks at the moment with quite big television channels in the UK. And I think it will. I've had loads and loads of ideas for documentaries because, I mean, without sounding big-headed, I think a lot of my articles would probably, you know, translate well into a documentary because a lot of time I write them, I think, God, there's so much more to this and it's so visual, but obviously you need a lot of funds and you need a lot of, you know, there's a lot of bureaucracy in that whole industry as well, which is a shame. But I do think, yeah, I think this year hopefully we'll get the ticket we need and I'll be making some series for TV, but it's all kind of, it's a bit hush-hush at the minute because I don't know everything about it, but so far it's positive.
For sure, man. That's awesome. Yeah, documentary filmmaking is, I used to love that shit too. Even with this, I tried to do a couple specials. I was going to find a local tarot reader and do a demonstration, but that fell through. And I went on a ghost hunt with this SoCal paranormal team, but it was like super lame. Nothing really happened.
Whispering.
Yeah, well, literally there were a couple times where me and my girl are sitting there and I say something to, I like whisper something to her and they're like, what was that? What was that? And it's like, I didn't even want to say it was me because I was embarrassed that I spoke. But, you know, in emails, they isolated those clips and they sent them to me as evidence that we were hearing voices. And I feel really bad, but there were
speaking.
There were times, there was at least two times where it was me.
Oh, shit.
I mean, I don't know. Nothing. I just and those were the ones where they were like, oh, this is the most distinct voice. And I'm like, yeah, well, no shit, because it wasn't.
That is cool. That is funny, man. I don't buy into a lot of those. I mean, I've watched a few things. You know, when you see the ghost hunters, and it's some of it's ridiculous. They leave it. It's the same point. You know, like as it goes to the ad break, they leave it at the same point. Like, oh my God, it's the ghost, and then it comes back in, and it turns out, you know, like it's a door shutting or something ridiculous like that.
Right.
I'm very skeptical about, you know, ghosts and stuff like that.
Right. Exactly. And right. And I should have thought about that because I was like, you know, what am I going to get that's conclusive when no one in history has ever got any conclusive footage, you know, and here I am thinking I'm going to go out and get something. But, you know, if I were to come to you with money and I said, yo, dude, I got the funds, I got the equipment, I got the crew, we got one shot to make a sick documentary, what would you make? Where would you, would it be this Immortal Death Cult or would it be something else?
That is a good question. What is like a one-off documentary or a series or...
Yeah, if you just had one shot to start your career as a documentary filmmaker, what subject would you tackle?
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, because we've been in so many talks, I've got about 10 different treatments written up for series and things we've been showing people. But what would I start the first thing? I tell you, you know, one of the first things I would start with is there's in Africa, in South Africa, in the slums of Botswana, they have there's basically a heavy metal cult kind. Well, I wouldn't say it's a cult. They're just basically crazy kind of these guys from Botswana who really believe in like heavy metal. So you've got these guys living in the slums, like kind of living really bad, but then they're dressed up. They dress like cowboys as well. So they're like always in character. And somehow they've got really into like Megadeth and Slayer and stuff like that. And they actually put on shows and they call it Afro metal. And it is amazing. I actually wrote up the treatment for it, and it's going to be called The Heavy Metal Cowboys of Botswana. And it is that, I would probably start with that because it's so visual as well. And they're, you know, in like in the West, the rock stars are usually arseholes. They're just, you know, they're kind of themselves. I don't want to generalize, but a lot of the time they are. These guys are like the coolest guys, and they're in character like all the time. Like they're totally nuts. Like, you know, they fully believe in the heavy metal. And, yeah, they go to the market, like, you know, dressed in leather chaps and with Megadeth T-shirts on and bring their guitar and, you know, start playing in the middle of this kind of shanty town. And it's really given them kind of, you know, a sense of, like, they're kind of doing something really positive. They're living in, you know, abject poverty. And, of course, the land has been raped by civil war. But they're saying, no, we're taking kind of, you know, a few aspects from the West with Megadeth and all these bands, and we're doing something really positive and we're doing it our own way. So that would probably be what I would first go out on, purely because it's just so different. And I think a lot of people would relate to it as well. I think, I mean, it's just, I don't know, but maybe I'm just overselling it, but it just seems crazy to me. You know,
yeah, that's awesome.
Kind manifest itself in the slums of South Africa.
Yeah, I would totally watch that one, man. I mean, it's weird. It really is, because you think about heavy metal, death metal, none of that stuff ever has like a positive spin to it. But it sounds like in this situation, it really does. It's actually helping people in some way. And it's just the weirdest thing, because you never would have made a tie between heavy metal and helping people. But somehow it does down there. So, yeah, that's definitely an episode I would watch.
That's cheers. I mean, that's definitely the angle I was going at. I mean, I think that will get made sooner rather than later, because I've kind of been in a few meetings where, you know, commissioners are really interested in it. But, yeah, man, there's loads of different things. Also, the art smuggler. Did you read that? Did I send you that?
I've read your article. I've heard other things about him. That's a crazy one, too.
Crazy guy, yeah. Michel Van Rijn. So, I mean, he's quite, I don't want to say a close friend, but he's, you know, me and him are quite, I know him quite well now. Obviously, through the success of that, that article, it did quite well. And off the back of that, there's a Hollywood film going to be made about Michelle's life. You know, American History X, the director of that, he's Tony Kaye, that's it. He's going to make the Michel Van Rijn biopic, basically, off the back of the article that I did on him, which was cool. So, yeah, and we want to make a documentary with him as well.
That's badass, man. If I had the money, I'd probably make Conspiracy the Musical with Neil Patrick Harris.
That would be incredible.
And Russell Brand, too. That would work.
You like Russell Brand, do you?
Yeah, man. He's awesome. He actually had David Icke on his show. And I don't know how popular he is over there, but, you know, having David Icke on your show, no one's doing that over here, except Alex Jones, I think, was on The View.
Good old Alex Jones. Yeah, Russell Brand, man. I like him. A lot of people in England don't like him. A lot of people hate him because he's a bit over the top and flamboyant. But I actually know the guy at the production company that I'm like doing stuff with. He knows him well, and he said he's a genuinely really nice guy. And you know, he helps people quite a lot as well. Pardon me. He helps a lot of. Do you know, he was addicted to heroin, and he helps a lot of people. Heroin and stuff like that. So yeah, apparently so. He's apparently a good guy as well.
Yeah, he's done. I was surprised to see him at a like little powwow with Daniel Pinchbeck and Graham Hancock. Some of the guys that I think are pretty leading philosophical thinkers today. And he's there with them, and I'm like, what the hell, man? He's like with all these kids just sitting around. I'm like, this is like the '60s. It's like this is like the Terrence McKenna stuff of the '60s, and you're there, and I'm like, what a weird place to be. He must be a pretty cool guy.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, his book. I bought his book for my girlfriend, and that is no offense to the guy, but it's a bit like, you know, it's a bit like he chewed up the thesaurus and spat it out. It's insane. It's just purple prose from start to finish. You know, he can't even say I walked down the street. He has to like meander whimsically down the road, you know. But other than that, he's a cool guy. Yeah, I think so.
That's funny. Another thing, you know, if I had the money to make a documentary, one of the shows that Jake did with me was with Douglas Hawes, actually. We talked about the legend of Montezuma's treasure buried somewhere in the Grand Canyon, and there's stories that there's, like, Egyptian tombs in the Grand Canyon and underground tunnels in Death Valley. I would love to take off with some buddies and try to just do, like, some Indiana Jones shit.
Yes.
That would be badass.
That would be incredible. Yeah. I would love that as well. There's a guy called Ollie Steeds. He's a journalist from the UK, and he had a program on I think Nat Geo, and he was doing similar things to that, man. And he actually went to, it was a bit different to that. He went to find Nazi treasure in Germany somewhere. He tried to find the Amber Room, and yeah, man, he was doing all that sort of stuff. And yeah, I think that'd be incredible as well. Sorry, I forgot to mention. Speaking of conspiracies, I didn't even mention it. One of the TV channels I've been speaking to here in the UK, they actually came to me wanting to make a documentary about the Illuminati and hip-hop. So that was something that we might be making. Yeah, and I mean, I wanted to come at it from, I mean, I will be honest, I'm a skeptic. I do believe in a lot of conspiracy theories, but I believe about 90% of it is probably bullshit. But I wanted to come at it from, yes, the Illuminati is real. Like, I didn't want to degrade any conspiracy theorists, because a lot of the time when, you know, programs are made for mainstream television and they make them about conspiracy theories, they just totally undermine conspiracy theorists and make them look like idiots, when I feel that's, you know, that's totally unfair. So I wanted to make it from the aspect of, yes, there is an Illuminati, they're probably not lizard men, you know, living in caves, drinking babies' blood and stuff. They are, you know, men in boardrooms with suits on and stuff like that. And that hip-hop is kind of exploiting that pop culture thing, you know, of Illuminati. So, because it's very alluring, isn't it? I mean, if you hear, oh, Jay-Z, you know, he's the devil. It's, wow, what's this? You know, so I definitely feel that they're exploiting that kind of, you know, that kind of side of it, which I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I think a lot of kids are politicizing themselves because they want to know about conspiracy theories. But at the same time, they kind of disregard, they kind of, what I'm saying is I find a lot of people, especially my age, trust conspiracy theories as much as they, the so-called sheeple, you know, trust the news, which I find a complete contradiction. I mean, mm-hmm. You question the news and say, well, this isn't real, but then wholeheartedly believe everything you see on a conspiracy forum, you know? So that was my, I was kind of, that's how we were going to approach it. But I mean, that might get, I think that's kind of in the pitching process still. But yeah, man, there's a lot to it. I mean, recently a guy shot his friend, sorry. And apparently he wanted to be a rapper and he said, oh, I'm sacrificing you to the Illuminati, and just shot the guy. And his friend was like, what are you doing? Like, luckily the guy survived and he got put in prison. But it's becoming quite a big issue. And I think it's a really interesting, you know, angle to go at it from.
Yeah, man. I saw that story, and that is awesome, because the subject of the Illuminati and hip hop and Hollywood is like one of these topics that I really haven't found the right guest for. Like, I've found a few people have written some stuff. The real one is Professor Griff from Public Enemy, but
yeah.
It just, he doesn't have, his online presence is real shaky. He doesn't have a good system for contact on his website, but he lists his phone number on there. And I just haven't gotten a chance to call him, but usually I want to book guests through email. So it's just kind of weird. I got to call a guy and see if he'd come on the show, but he would be the guy. But man, there is a lot of stuff. I mean, of course, I'm not convinced of anything. That's the angle I take. I'm not convinced of anything, but the more coincidences there are, the more likely something is to be true. And there are a huge amount of them with the Illuminati and hip hop. I mean, especially with the blood sacrifices. I mean, there's a lot of speculation that there's a certain amount of money. I can't remember what it's like, a $20 million club. And they'll basically put you up on this tier if you perform a blood sacrifice. And there's a lot of speculation that when Kanye West's mom died of plastic surgery, that was a weird death. Aaliyah went down in a plane crash. That was apparently this guy Damon Dash's Illuminati sacrifice. Jay-Z had a nephew who died, I believe. Eminem had a friend who was shot outside of this club. And and did you know in that there's a video where – like, there's an Eminem video where Proof gets shot outside of a club a year before it happened.
Toy Soldiers, the video for Toy Soldiers, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, that kind of weird shit. And all these people did get up there. You know, they are all on the top of the food chain when the Illuminati is concerned. And another crazy one. I don't know if you, with the Aurora shooting, that Lil Wayne video came out right before the Aurora shooting. And I think the song's My Homies Still. And what was fucked up about that is there's a scene, there's all kinds of weird symbolism in the video, but there's a scene particularly where he's dancing around a movie theater with a couple of buddies and there's 11 skeletons in the room. That's all there is an empty theater room, them dancing, and 11 skeletons. And 11 people died in Aurora. And it came out literally like the week before.
Yeah, that was really strange. That was very strange. There probably is a lot to it, but where I really believe, the way I kind of believe in strongly is how Public Enemy, the guy from there, he said how they were, you know, Public Enemy came out and they're really kind of, you know, empowering the black youth of America and very, well, some people wouldn't say a positive message, but I think they were, you know, they were giving a really positive message. They were talking about, you know, the truth. They were saying about, you know, just civil rights and really good shit they were talking about. And then all of a sudden there was this influx of gangster rap and then, you know, kind of hip hop got demonized into this kind of street thug thing. That I do believe in. I mean, I spoke to a guy about that and he said, he was telling me about some theory where the CIA were like, look, we need to kind of quote and, you know, these kids down, they're going to start a revolution type thing and they're going to start, you know, bombing and kind of doing weather underground type stuff through hip hop. And that I believe in, but the blood sacrifices, I mean, I don't know, man. it is kind of crazy, but I mean, I'm not saying no way, but I don't know. It's crazy. I think in Indo, like you're saying, Hollywood and that kind of the power structure and entertainment, there is definitely, whether it be the Illuminati or politicians who have, you know, agendas they want to skewer in people's minds using films. I don't know, but I fully agree with you that there's something fishy going on. That's kind of, you know, where I kind of, that's as much as I would believe in, that there is something fishy going on. I don't know if it is, you know, like it could be blood sacrifices, who knows, stranger stuff has happened.
True.
That's one thing I love about conspiracy theories. Like you say, you can look at it and go, oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting angle. But, you know what I mean? I think some people, it's dangerous in a way, because some people read it and go, that's interesting. That's definitely the truth. You know, and it's like, sometimes it can be damaging. But I love conspiracy theories, man. And I love the whole conspiracy theory community and the whole tinfoil hat brigade. I'm fully into, I love all that, man. And whether I believe it at all, no, of course not. I believe 90% of it is bullshit, like I've said before. But the 10% that I do believe is real is like overpowers the bullshit for me, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And one other thing I wanted to talk about, you wrote about another little conspiracy gem, which is the Denver airport.
Yeah.
Have you ever been there?
No. It's painted over now. I was going to, but it's already been painted over.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff has. I've been through the Denver airport several times, and I've never seen that stuff, but the zombie horse statue is definitely there in full force.
Bizarre, yeah. I mean, that is very weird. What the hell is that, you know? I mean, what was that? I mean, how can they... That, for me, was a no-brainer. You can't say, well, he was trying to channel this. I mean, he had Nazis in gas masks stabbing Native Indians on a mural in an airport. I mean, what? I mean, how other way can you look at that? And the artist who did it, he's dubious because he says different things in different interviews. So, I mean, you can't really trust the guy.
Right. And for people who don't know what we're talking about, the Denver International Airport is it was built outside of Denver. It's kind of far out there. There was a lot of construction that went down. Like, basically, people have analyzed that there must be some huge underground construction due to the amount of dirt that got displaced and all this other shit. But the murals inside, which Jake was just talking about, which the piece is about, they're really weird. There's all kinds of weird shit. And there's some very apocalyptic images. And globally apocalyptic. It's got kids of all races. Really strange. I mean, even the runways are in a swastika pattern, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, that's debatable. It kind of is and kind of isn't. But, yeah, everything else is very true. And, I mean, there's even like a Freemason sign, kind of like a plaque just randomly there. So it's, I don't know, man. That one thing, that was really strange for me. I don't have any answer to it. But what is it? I mean, why would they do that? Why would they, in an airport? I mean, it's just bizarre. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading that I think they dug the same amount of dirt out of the ground as like they did out of the Suez Canal. So it's just, what is, yeah, there's stuff underneath there. I don't even think that's specifically in the realm of conspiracy. I mean, sure, the leaders of the world would want to find somewhere to go if, you know, if as they say, the shit hits the fan, you know. But I mean, they would find somewhere. And I mean, the Queen owns a lot of land around there as well, which is the Queen of England, which is kind of strange.
Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, it seems like a good place if there was going to be some apocalyptic event. It seems like a good place to go. It's in the middle of nowhere. It's you could easily get some pawns to be your little military around there and just hole up.
Lots of nice art to look at.
Right. I guess another thing is I don't know much about airports, but apparently it's odd that there would be an international airport there, considering it's somewhat an exception to the rule in some way, and in terms of the way America does their international airports.
I read that. Isn't it like it's one of the top 10 biggest airports in the world as well, one of the top 10 biggest internationals, and
right, and considering the city it's in, it's not even, I mean, Denver, it should be either in New York or LA or Chicago, I mean,
sure,
but, you know,
I would love to know what that is.
A lot of weird stuff out there. I mean, we could talk about it forever, but it looks like we've talked for about an hour. I mean, it's been a blast. You know, one thing, man, I'm really impressed with your success. I mean, not to say it's not without merit, but I mean, there's a lot of people trying to write. You're 23 and you're now published in much of these publications that people would dream about being in. And you're now in talks to be doing the documentary stuff. I mean, that's, you're doing it, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that. I really appreciate you saying it. I mean, it does, I mean, for me, it's a no-brainer to me. I just think a lot of people could do it. I just think you just need to get up and do it. You know, you just have to really. I mean, I didn't get anywhere from, you know, nobody's really said, oh, I'll put in a good word for you. Or, I mean, it's just been, you know, hard work and putting yourself out there. And I mean, a lot of the time people say, oh, how did you get a meeting at, you know, like Channel 4 or whatever? And I just rang them. You know, you just ring them or email them and say, look, I've got an idea. Can I come in and speak to you? And say, okay. You know, a lot of them will, you know, if you've got the ideas and you've got, you know, a little bit of talent or whatever, you can take yourself far, I think.
Right. A lot of times people are their own worst enemy. They don't think they can do it. They talk themselves out of it. And you got to stop doing that, people.
Definitely. I mean, I've done it a lot to myself. I mean, I always say, people say, oh, it must be great being a freelance journalist. And I say, well, yeah, in a way. But I mean, you know, I'm one step away from, you know, in the job center. You know, and I'm one step away from that at all times. But it's just, you know, it comes with the territory. But
for sure.
I think people, if they can put their minds to something and just believe in themselves, I think sometimes, you know, you just have to do it, take the risk, and if it fails, you know, it fails, at least you tried.
Yeah, man. I mean, hey, if you're ever out in the States and you need someone to hold a camera, dude, I'll come out there. You know, we'll go treasure hunting in the Grand Canyon. It'll be like the Rundown, if you ever saw that. You can be The Rock.
Definitely.
I'll be Sean William Scott.
We'll definitely go treasure hunting. Definitely.
I'll be Rosario Dawson.
There you go. Well, dude, again, it's been a blast. I mean, are there any interesting things you're going to be working on you wanted to throw out there? Did you get your website finished?
Oh, yes, yeah. If anyone wants to, it's not totally finished, but it's online now. So if you go to jakehanrahan.com, which is jakehanrahan.com, all my kind of, I just pick my favorite work that I've written, and that's all on there. It's like a portfolio website and a way to contact me, yeah. So also, hopefully, I should have a ebook out on the Kindle store, which will be called Field Report, which is basically just a compilation of my work from 2011 till now that I think people are probably interested in. You know, it's going to be up for like, I don't know, £1, which is probably, I don't know, like $1.50 or something. So yeah, I'm just going to put that on there. So if anyone wants to pick that up, they can.
Badass. Bender, was there anything else you wanted to add before we let him go?
No, man, it was, you know what, I really liked reading all those articles. You seem to view every conspiracy theory you've written about from kind of all sides, and you're not afraid to say, you know, this might be, this might not.
Yeah, so, definitely. I mean, I really appreciate the fact that, you know, you guys have read it and read my articles and liked them as well, because that, for me, that's forgetting, like, money or whatever. That is my favorite thing. You know, if I can write something and say, like, you know, someone else reads it and enjoys it, that, for me, is amazing. I mean, that's why I want to make documentaries and say, look, here's some cool shit that I really like. I've investigated, I've looked into it. You guys should look at it too, you know. And for me, that's brilliant. I really appreciate that you guys have, you know, enjoyed the work. And yeah, I with the conspiracy thing, I hate anybody that sneers, you know, like kind of that sneering kind of thing at anything. So, I mean, why not give anything a chance? You know, if you look into it, get the facts, not fiction. That's what I always think.
Amen, man. I feel the exact same way about the show. The fact that someone would sit down for an hour of their day, their already stretched day, and listen to some of the shit I'm talking about.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for letting me on. I mean, it's good you let me on. Thanks.
Of course, man. And it's Oi Jake on Twitter.
Oi Jake. Yeah.
All right.
OIJAKE. Yeah.
Nice. Follow this man. Hey, it's been great talking to you. Keep up the solid work, man. Best of luck.
Thanks, man. Keep in touch.
All right, man. Enjoy the day.
Cool, man. Thanks.
All right. I like that guy. What'd you think, Bender?
No, it was a good show, man, a real good show. I wish I could have asked him a little bit more. Like, actually, he and I kind of had a little mini conversation on Twitter once about the whole Dr. Ketchum situation with the Bigfoot DNA, and I don't know if you know anything about that.
Yeah, it turned out to be a raccoon or something.
Yeah, and so he and I kind of had a little mini conversation about that, and I was super excited about that whole story for the longest time until I found out it was, like, all the red flags that came up with all of it, and that, like, she, I guess, in the science world, like, your theories and everything don't mean anything until they're published in your findings, rather, don't mean anything until they're published in a scientific journal, and no scientific journal would touch her work, so she made her own scientific journal. And so it wanted to just be, I was so excited at first, because, I mean, this would have been, I mean, and, you know, to a lot of people, pretty much life-changing, because, you know, this would have been evidence of Bigfoot. But then this lady just, oh, man, it was nuts. There were so many people that had put so much faith in all this and so excited about all of it. And I'm not, like, this diehard Bigfoot fan or anything. I don't, like, follow him on Twitter or anything. But, I mean, it was still just, you know, it was exciting because it was like, hey, man, somebody finally has some kind of DNA. This might be it. This might be the smoking gun. But, no, it was bullshit.
Yeah.
But, no, it was a really good episode, though. I was happy to talk to him. And, like I said, I wish I could have said more, but, like, you know, I sent you in that text. The girls just got home from my parents' house, and they're both sick, so.
Right.
So I had a lot going on 99 here.
99 problems.
Time we're recording. Exactly.
Well, you know, Jake, it's always a pleasure talking to you. I really wanted to thank you again for all your input here at THC. It's a real bummer that there are not going to be any more Reality Bender articles from you on the website, but, you know, it's tough. Jesus, I plan to write one once a week. I've written, like, two total, and I don't have any kids. So.
Right. Yeah, you know what? I've been thinking about actually writing one. I'm going to try to, you know, if I can get one to you here and there. I just can't, see sitting down once a week and, you know, for 2, 3 hours, 4 hours sometimes writing down a blog and shit like that. But, you know, I liked it. Don't get me wrong. It was so hard to find the time, especially now that I've actually taken this new direction of, like, you know, working out and things like that. If I work out for 45 minutes to an hour every night, then that's, you know, an hour less I have with my kids.
Right.
So if I do that and then blog, then I won't see my kids at all for that day or 2 days, basically. Because, you know, I work I'm out of the house for about 12 hours a day with work, sometimes longer, sometimes less, but it just depends on the day. But, no, it's, you know what, it's, I kind of feel bad for today's episode because, you know, like I said, the girls just got home, and so it's been kind of a, everything's kind of being rushed around upstairs and everything at the house, and people have been coming downstairs. Wife's getting ready for something. So, yeah, I wish I could have said more today, but there's a lot going on here, a whole lot going on at the Bender house that holds.
Right on, man. And it happens, but I do appreciate the effort you have put in. I appreciate that you're going to continue to be a co-host because I think we've had some good episodes together, and I think we'll have some more. So that's awesome.
Yep, just let me know when the next one is, man. I'd be happy to move my schedule around.
All right, man. Well, you know, thanks everybody for listening. I hope you're staying entertained just by listening and sticking with me. It's really humbling. It's a fucking honor, you know. Check out conspiracies.net for my awesome conspiracy-themed t-shirts of the finest quality. New designs in the not-too-distant future, I hope. All right. Jake, enjoy your day.
Hey, you too, Greg.
I'll see you people next week.
Yeah, this one's for the workers who toil night and day by hand and by brain. Your pay for centuries long past for no more than your bread. Have bled for your countries and counted your dead. In the factories and mills, in the shipyards and mines, we've often been told and the